dance.
UBC Theater and Film presents a world premiere shining with love and possibility. Wives and Daughters by Jacqueline Firkins, based on Elizabeth Gaskell's Victorian serial novel, is a charming romp of love convoluted by hidden desires and expectations.
I like to be liked, but when people carry their affection too far, they become troublesome.
Cynthia's a sweet girl and charming, but she was always in some spot of trouble. She wasn't mischievous exactly, but mischief seemed to follow her.
Join us from November 9th to 25th at the Frederick Wood Theater.
After a certain age, a daughter becomes inconvenient.
So we must stop being inconvenient daughters and become inconvenient wives?
Theaterfilm.ubc.ca.
Good evening, Vancouver. You are listening to CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting live from unceded Musqueam and Coast Salish territory. This is the UBC Happy Hour, a show that is all about what's happening on UBC's campus. UBC Happy Hour is collaboratively produced by the UBC's Affairs Collective. If you like what you hear, come join the collective. Or if there's something that you would like to see covered at UBC, send us an email at ubcaffairs@citr.ca.
Yeah, so we have a lot of people in the studio today, which is really exciting. So we're just going to do a quick roundtable, and then we're going to introduce our very special guest who's going to be joining us for the first part of the show. We have a really exciting episode today. We're going to be doing a live interview with Sheldon Goldfarb, who's here now, about The 100-Year Trek, which is a book that he wrote about UBC's AMS history. So, yeah, we're going to be doing a little bit of like a historical portal, I guess you could say, today. And then in the second part of the show, we're going to be talking about course evaluations, why you should do them, and how we found our courses this year. And then we also went to the polar bear swim. So we got a lot of audio from people screaming, I'm cold. yeah, it's the last day of classes, so it's really exciting. So I'm Alex Lenz. I'm the coordinator for the UBC Affairs Collective. And we also have...
Julia, and I'm a member of the collective for UBC Affairs.
Lalaine, just another member.
I'm Sadie. I'm a collective member.
And who is our amazing guest?
I'm Sheldon Goldfarb, the author of The 100-Year Trek.
Yay! We are so excited to have basically a UBC historian in the studio with us today. So Sheldon, do you want to just kind of give a brief introduction of your book that you just wrote?
Well, it's meant to be a year-by-year story of what the students got up to on campus, starting from the beginning of the university in 1915 and up to, well, it was supposed to end in 2015, but there's a little postscript to bring it even more up to date. And it's supposed to be an entertaining story about the interesting things that went on, even including your very own Nardwar, who gets into the book because of the interesting question he asked Prime Minister Jean Chrétien in 1997 after the APEC riot, asked him about pepper spray and what did the Prime Minister think about pepper spray. And the Prime Minister didn't hear him right or didn't know what pepper spray was, didn't know that the RCMP was using pepper. Anyway, the Prime Minister said, pepper? I don't know this. Pepper is something I put on my plate. And that created a story all by itself about how the Prime Minister was so indifferent and callous and uncaring, and it was all because of Nardwar's question. So the book is full of little anecdotes like that, interesting things from the time of the Great Trek of 1922 up until the complaint to the United Nations in 2010, and even more recent, the boat to Gaza episode, and all sorts of things, and of course the wild 1960s.
Right. So how did this book kind of come to be?
Well, in 2011, the president of the AMS, Jeremy McElroy, came to me and said the executive had been discussing things, the AMS executive, and that they wanted to do a centennial project because 2015 was going to be the university's 100th anniversary and also the 100th anniversary of the AMS, the Student Society, and we should do something. And they were thinking a book on the history of the students of the AMS would be good, and they thought I'd be the one to write it because I was the archivist. I am the archivist for the AMS, so I have the records, I know the history, and I have a writing background. I published a murder mystery a dozen years ago, so they thought, there's a good combination. And so how about you write the 100-year history, Sheldon? And I thought, oh my God, 100 years. But eventually, yes, I sat down to it. And after, we didn't start right away because there was, like, when am I going to do it in my spare time? Are they going to hire me on a contract? How will we fund it? All that sort of stuff. And there were delays. But eventually I started writing it in 2014. And I thought, well, that's no problem. It took me a year to write a novel. So it'll take me a year to write this history book. But instead, it took 3 years. And so the book is just coming out now. I just got my copy today, in fact. So,
yay. And we have a copy of the book with us in studio. It's really nice. There are tons of images and pictures. And so where did the kind of majority of the archives come from in the book?
The information for the stories, it's primarily, I spent my time reading back issues of the student newspaper, the UBC. I've laid claim to having read every single issue, not every single article, but every single issue. And so the book is really a history of what made the news, literally what made the UBC. So there's the big stories during the war and the Depression and protests and activism. And then also, especially towards the end, when I got a bit tired of that, I said, well, what else is going on? I moved to the culture pages of the UBC, what they used to call Page Friday, when they used to have two editions. One came out on the Tuesday, one came out on the Friday. It's funny about the UBC. They began with one issue a week. And they thought that was the way to get the news to you as fast as possible. Once a week, we'll tell you the news, which was better than what they had before, which was a monthly magazine. And then they eventually went to two a week, then three a week, then four a week. And now they're back to one a week because they're mostly online. So I read every issue and looked for what made the news, what made the feature pages. In one case, what made the announcement, they used to have these little announcement pages, like the French Club will meet in Buchanan, whatever it's, and that, which is, I would usually skip right over that. But one day my eye was caught in the 1978 papers by the Revolutionary Trotskyites group. And I thought, well, at first I shrugged and thought, whatever. And then a week later, there's another one for the young Trotskyites. And I thought, okay, what are these people? And they were these little announcement sayings, saying things like, we're going to have a house meeting to discuss laundry, or we're going to have a spaghetti evening and watch Fellini films, or it's time to clean the house and we have to meet at the Trutch house. So they were people who lived in a house on Trutch Street, and presumably a communal house to which they would all have keys, and therefore they were all Trutch Keyites. But they're playing on the, it's a joke like on Trotskyites, right? So anyway, so they're in the book. Anything interesting, I thought, I put in the book.
Oh my God. So they were just kind of like some really intense student house that was advertising in the UBC.
I suspected, I haven't been able to track this down. I spoke to someone who was on the UBC just afterwards, who, it was mentioned in the paper, he had a house on Trutch Street. That's Bill Thielman, who still writes for 24 Hours or something like that. And he said, no, he doesn't know what the Revolutionary Trotskyites were, but intense or joking around. Or joking intently, I don't know. And so I thought if they were UBC staff, be easy, they could just stick an announcement in. But actually, so if anyone out there can, if any former Revolutionary Trotskyites are out there, please come forward. There'll be an amnesty and, yeah.
That's amazing. So what is The Great Trek?
The Great Trek is probably the most famous or one of the most famous events in the history of the students of UBC. It took place in 1922. It was a march from downtown Georgia Street through the streets of Vancouver and over to where we are now on campus. But except there was no campus there. There was a one half-built building and some cleared land ready to build the campus because the university was created by an act of the legislature and was supposed to open in 1915. The government had said in 1908, okay, we'll get ready for 1915. We'll have the we'll have the university open on the Point Grey campus then. Unfortunately, in 1914, World War I broke out, which sort of interrupted everything, and the resources had to go to the war effort. They couldn't go to building the campus. And so in 1915, the university still opened, but in temporary buildings in the Fairview area of town, 10th and Oak, near the Vancouver General Hospital, VGH. They shared some buildings with VGH. In fact, there were some tensions because there was a big flu epidemic and VGH needed some of its buildings back. Anyway, for a while, the university shared space with the hospital or next to the hospital in that area, and that was during the war. The war ended in 1918, and okay, and then but there was still no movement on finishing the campus in Point Grey. The students complained, were packed like sardines in what they called the Fairview Shacks. And so they said, come on, we got to do something. And finally, they had this big campaign in the 1922-23 year. They did a petition. They got 50,000 signatures, not just from students. There were only about 1,200 students in those days. But the community was behind this. All of the city, the major papers, the Sun and the Province thought there should be a proper university campus. And they went around the province, I think, in the summer before 22-23. To collect signatures from people who agreed that there should be a real campus. And then they had this march, and they took the streetcar. They marched a bit downtown, jumped on the streetcar. The men jumped on one streetcar. The women jumped on another. That's just the way things were in those days. There was a men's literary society, a women's literary society. Things were divided. Not everything. The editor of the University of Toronto paper came to town one day and was shocked. I went into the library, he said, and the men and the women were sitting together in the library and in the cafeteria too. Shocking. But some things were done separately. So they took separate streetcars. The men went to Sassamat. The women went to, I forget where, Alma, or the other way around. And then they marched from there. That was the end of streets in Vancouver at that time. And they went from there and they marched, probably took half an hour, to the location where UBC is now, and they clambered up. There's a picture on the front cover of the book. They clambered up into what was then going to be the science building. It's still here. It's the chemistry building now. And they clambered up there and waved banners. There's even a film. And it's been transferred to video. And so there's a 2.5 little silent film of the students rushing out of classrooms down in Fairview and then marching along Georgia Street and then clambering up into the building. And then also they formed the giant UBC, three letters. You may have seen that picture too. And that was the Great Trek, and it was successful. They also went to Victoria with the petition afterwards. And a week later, the government said, okay, here's your $1.5 million, which is all you needed in those days to build a university. The university building got back on track, and the university opened on this campus in 1925.
So what are some key differences that you notice between, or I guess kind of over the course of UBC's history from 1925 to now? Because in the book you say that, you notice that some things are really different and some things are really similar.
Well, there's things we don't do anymore. We don't electrocute first-year students, I don't think. Is anyone?
I hope not.
I'm like, oh, I did that earlier this week. We're not allowed to do that anymore.
So that was sort of initiation or hazing, the critics called it. The person didn't die, by the way. I don't know how many. We have a picture. It's in the early pages of the book of someone. Their hands are out. They're being connected to a couple of batteries or something, and they're being zapped with electricity.
Oh, God.
And
okay.
That was welcome to UBC. And they did other strange things for initiation, especially. They did things called snake dances. The student body would go downtown, link arms, and go running through the streets and causing mayhem and damage. And one student put their arm through a car window. And the headline in the Vancouver Sun was "Student May Lose Arm," which he didn't. And then we got sued as a result. The first lawsuit involving AMS members and the students because someone got run over during one of these snake parades downtown. my assistants were the one, had seven assistants at various times digging up the information, and one of them said, oh, and someone got run over. I said, by a car? No, run over. By the students were running through the streets, and they trampled on a bystander, and he broke his leg, and he sued. And so we don't do that anymore. But some things are the same. People are still partying and studying and joining clubs and complaining about tuition fees going up. And the AMS leadership, Student Council, is especially complaining about tuition fees when they go up and petitioning the government to provide more funding for the university. So some things like that haven't changed. There's one major thing that is really different. Maybe it only affects the leadership, the council, and the executive, but in a way it affects everybody. It's as a result of the 60s. Before the 60s, the university brought in their tuition fee increases or whatever. The students might grumble and complain and even march, but okay. And they would make plans for campus development, and okay. And they would have the Board of Governors would make decisions, and there were no students on the Board of Governors, and the Senate would make decisions about academic matters, and there were no students on Senate. But during the 60s, the radical 60s, were a real wild time on campus here, not just here, around the world. The students rose up and protested a lot, and the radicals, especially the radicals, said the students are a majority here. It's a democracy. Majority rules. Students should rule the university, which didn't exactly happen. But there were enough protests that the university said, okay, we'll put four students on the Senate. That was the first time, 1967, four students. And the radicals said, that's tokenism. There's 80 members. And the university said, and the university was sort of intimidated. The university said, okay, 12. How about 12? Is 12 good enough? And so there were then 12 students on the university senate. And a few years later, there are two students' positions created on the Board of Governors, and the university began putting students on university committees, advisory committees. Lots of things happened like that. That's the biggest change. That still happens today. AMS executive and council send people off to various committees, and we have students on board and senate. And so, and there's consultation. Sometimes people say it's not good enough consultation, but there was no consultation at all before the 60s. So big change.
That sounds wonderful. Just out of curiosity about the protests and having change being implemented in the university, because especially in such a big campus where we all feel really small sometimes, what did those protests look like that really made an impact on the politics of UBC or even globally with
One of the biggest protests, it's pretty famous too, next to the Great Trek, probably the most famous, the occupation of the faculty club in 1968. Jerry Rubin, an American student radical who'd been involved in the protests in Chicago at the Chicago Democratic Convention, which led to them being arrested and all sorts. He came up to UBC with his pig. He had a pig named Pegasus. yes. The pig was actually running in the 1968 American presidential elections, or that was their joke. This was the Youth International Party. That was Jerry Rubin and Abby Hoffman were leading that, and they were putting forward their pig, Pegasus, as a candidate in the election. Anyway, he came to UBC with his pig, and he came and talked to a huge group of students and told them what they needed to do was to liberate things, liberate yourself, liberate the power structures. If you find a rule, break it, he said, and don't get sucked into the corporate structure, power structure. Don't be co-opted. Go. The main thing is you've got to liberate something. What can we liberate here on campus? And someone yells out, the faculty club, which is a club that doesn't even exist anymore, but that's where the faculty go hang out and have a drink. And the students, by the way, couldn't drink on campus, really, because there was no pub on campus. There was no pit pub. There was no place for students to drink. And in fact, the AMS had policy against drinking up until almost right that time and said, if you come to an AMS event, there's no drinking at AMS events. You can't even have liquor on your breath if you show up. And three students were fined $25 back in the 30s, I think, for showing up at an agriculture student's land and food now, but they were called the agriculture students then, the Aggies, had a ball, and these three students showed up drunk or with liquor on their breath and were fined $25. So there was no drinking for the students on campus, but the faculty could drink in there. faculty club, and Jerry Rubin said, what should we liberate? Someone said the faculty club. So 2,000 students in October 1968 marched off to the faculty club, took it over. I was just speaking to a couple of professors before I came here today, and they said, oh, some of the profs hung around and stayed with the students, but mostly it was the students taking over the club, liberating it, liberating the liquor cabinets so they could drink on campus. They liberated the swimming pool and went skinny dipping, and then in the middle someone said, you know what we need? What we need now is a band. So someone called a band in, which did an impromptu set in the faculty club as part of, and they stayed overnight. So the 2,000 students stayed overnight, had their protest, caused some damage. The faculty club sent a bill to the AMS. The AMS leadership, the president, Dave Zernhout, who went on to be a cabinet minister in an NDP government, so, you know, not conservative, but not... And he said, but we didn't do this. We didn't arrange this protest. But council in the end, student council in the end, I think paid a bit of money, compensation for the damage. But the result, if you were asking, I think it was the very next day, there was a huge teach-in on campus. 5,000 students attended that. It sort of flowed from the occupation, which was spontaneous and unplanned, really. And it was a teach-in on education reform. There had already been a lot of talk about education reform in those days. The courses are too boring. I'm not sure the revolution cured that. But anyway, we want more interesting courses. The profs shouldn't be reading to us from their lecture notes from 20 years ago. There should be more seminars. And UBC started introducing new things, like the Arts One program came in then. So there were changes on campus. And as I said, at this time, they'd already put a few students on Senate, and they put more students on Senate. So there were teach-ins about education. That was education reform was one of the things the students were talking about in the 60s, and that the occupation and the rally after that helped push that along.
Mm. So I suppose that's why it was called the Radical 60s?
I think so. They were radical in all sorts, culturally too. Rock music came in, the Beatles. Drugs, LSD. Timothy Leary was very popular. He didn't come to campus, but there were ads in the UBC paper for a long-playing record. That's what they had in those days, LPs. Timothy Leary talking about the wonders of LSD, and people would write in the UBC, well, LSD is this wonderful drug. There's no side effects, which I'm given to understand is not true. and people took marijuana. That was more common, and there were articles in the UBC about marijuana, although this at the beginning it was sort of like, well, what's this marijuana thing? We're not sure it's good for you, but gradually, you know, the UBC became much more radical, the newspaper, and it took drug taking for granted, and rock and roll, although it didn't like the Beatles. Oh, this is just a fad. The Beatles will never last, they said. The UBC has not always been good with predictions. When Elvis Presley came out in the 50s, they said, oh, what is this guy? He can't even sing. He sounds like a toilet bowl with hiccups. And so they were wrong about that. They were wrong about Oscar Wilde, too, I guess. This is way back, 1919. The Players Club, one of the oldest clubs on campus, put on plays, and they put on Oscar Wilde, The Importance of Being Earnest. The UBC editor said, why are you putting on this degenerate trash? Put on something healthy and, you know, good for people and uplifting. And so that's, you know, anyway. So now I've forgotten the original question.
Oh, no, that's quite all right. I mean, Oscar Wilde is now reviewed in some of the classes at UBC. So I guess it's interesting how that
jokes
changed.
On them. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
What is one of your favorite stories from the book?
Oh, I already told you about the revolutionary Trotskyites. Mm-hmm. A sadder story is the case of poor Louis Chaudet. In 1932 or thereabouts, he was just an ordinary student who wanted to play rugby and basketball. And the AMS had just – the AMS ran athletics, by the way, in those days. So in some ways, the AMS had more power, although mostly they had less. And, I mean, things like student council had to submit their minutes to the university for approval. If the university didn't like it, they said, no, you can't do that. But the AMS was sort of handed over to them by the university, run the athletics program. It was the AMS that came up with the name Thunderbirds, or through the UBC newspaper. I'll credit the UBC newspaper for this, that there was no name for sports teams on campus. And the UBC newspaper, the sports editor said, well, the other teams are like Bears and Tigers and Lions, and we're what? The UBC varsity. It doesn't inspire anyone. So they had a contest, named the sports team, and the winner, and they had a vote. They had a whole bunch of selections, and the winner was Seagulls. and the UBC newspaper, this, no, come on, people. We can't call the team the Seagulls. And so in the best democratic traditions, if you have an election and it doesn't go the way you want, well, we'll just not pay attention to it. We'll have another election. And so they did, and this time Thunderbird won. And so it was the Thunderbird sports teams. And right around the same time is when Louis Chaudet wanted to play for the rugby and the basketball team, but the AMS had changed the rules on eligibility. I forget now if it was academic eligibility or he just was in the wrong year. And they said, no, you know, you're not eligible. You can't play in the rugby team. And he said, okay, I will go play on a city team. And then the AMS said, no, you can't do that. That would be disloyal to your university. You can't play for a team that's, and because the AMS teams played the city teams, you can't play for a team against the AMS. You can only play for AMS teams. Okay, I want to play for the AMS teams. No, you're not eligible. Sounds a bit like a Monty Python skit. But Monty Python guy came to campus once. One of my headlines is, and now for something completely different. And here the Monty Python guy came and signed copies of his book. He did a book launch. Anyway. I'm doing a book launch on Monday, by the way. Did anyone mention this?
Would you like to maybe, before we wrap up, kind of talk about the book launch and where people can find the book if they're interested?
The book is available now at the UBC bookstore. It's also available on Amazon and at Chapters. There will also be copies available at the book launch, which is being held Monday, December 4th. This is coming Monday, 6:30 p.m. in the new University Alumni Center, which is right next door to the Student Nest. There's links to get to it, and there's a promotional code that can get you in free. But anyway, so that's when it is.
Who do you think is kind of the intended audience of this book?
Well, the reason we're having it at the Alumni Center is, the book is about students, but students from the 1950s, 60s, 70s, 80s, they're not students anymore. They're alumni. So that's an obvious, people who want to remember the old bus stop cafe, which you won't remember, it's an old place where people, it was a fun place to eat, next to, it's where the Triple O's is now. Before the Triple O's, it was White Spot. Before that, it was Trekkers. Before that, it was 99 Chairs. Before that, it was the Bus Stop Cafe, which a lot of people remember fondly. And now I've forgotten the question again.
But so much for the liberation from the 60s, eh? If it's taken by corporate.
We moved. The trend is pendulum swings in many different ways. I think you were asking where you could...
Audience,
right. So alumni, people, that's part of the, but I hope I've written an entertaining book, fun for anyone to read, current students, the former students, the alumni, people who never came to UBC, I hope will enjoy it, just to get a little picture of what life was like here and just to have a good read, I hope it's a good read, and maybe tells you a little bit about social and cultural history and the trends and the changes over the years, which are typical not just of UBC, but of campuses and students and life in general in North America over the past 100 years. So there you go.
Yeah, and from a campus journalism perspective, this is so cool because I remember, when we first started this show, I was like, if only we had, a UBC historian. And I was like, that, where would we find such a thing? And you exist. So it's so cool. And you seem so knowledgeable. It seems like you could just talk for days on end about UBC, so that's really awesome. What is it like being such an expert on the topic?
I like answering people's questions. Even before I wrote the book, my job here was to say, people would say, well, where did this policy come from? What did council do 5 years ago? We don't understand. And I dig up the information. And with my assistants, I have lots of good assistants, but I like answering people's questions. So that's a historic, I do have a degree in history and a degree in archives, also degrees in English, too many degrees. So I like finding things out and then telling people about them.
Amazing. Sheldon, thank you so much for joining us. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
Thanks. We're going to go to a quick music break. So Sadie, do you want to introduce our song?
Yeah, for sure. So up next, we have a song from Glendale, a rock band from Vancouver, and one of their band members, Oscar, is a UBC student. They headlined at Sound Circus last weekend. Here is their track, I've Got Love in My Heart.
We'll be right back. سلام روزتون بخیر. My name is Sahand, the president of UBC Persian Club.
And this is Yasaman, the VP admin.
UBC Persian Club is a non-profit student organization with the goal of empowering the Iranian community at UBC by acting as a social hub for Iranian students, bringing together diverse members of the community who have a common interest in Iranian culture, and nurturing and representing the Iranian community in Vancouver.
We have monthly member-exclusive events, Pelon, we screen documentary movies and short films by Iranian directors with English subtitles. Music gatherings, a series of casual music gatherings at which students can play different types of instruments, and sports events and game nights.
Our regular events are member exclusive and you will receive 25% discount on our annual events. You can visit us at ubcpc.com or email us through info@ubcpc.com.
Or you can follow us on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have entered a soundstage at
CITR
studio for a visit with
the folks who are
directing the exciting young star
Dama
Dora
and
guest
Vin.
The Real World.
The Real World is the UBC Film Society's radio show.
We talk about
events,
actors,
directors,
and genres.
We come up with most of the genres.
And that's what makes it so jazzy.
It's a lot of fun and games, except not that many games.
If you think you can handle all of this, tune in Fridays from 11 to 12 on CITR 101.9 FM.
Shout out to Ed Norton!
Join us every other Wednesday from 6:30 to 8 p.m. for Sam Squanch's Hideaway with your host, Anita B., as she plays all Canadian music with a focus on indie rock and pop.
Oh, man.
What?
I really wanted to catch that football game, but I have to clean my room. I'm so bummed.
Yo, man, totally chill out. You can catch it on CITR.
CITR?
Did someone say CITR?
Yeah.
CITR Radio brings you Thunderbird Sports on the weekends. Catch all the action and don't miss a moment of play with our live play-by-play and color commentary. Only on CITR 101.9 FM.
Wow, that's great.
And if you can't catch the game, tune in at 3:30 p.m. every Thursday for our weekly update on UBC Athletics with live scores, recaps, and in-depth analysis.
Oh, okay, dude. Okay, dude. We get it.
Dude!
Only on CITR.
You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting live from unceded Musqueam and Coast Salish territory. This is UBC Happy Hour, a show that is all about what's happening on UBC's campus. UBC Happy Hour is collaboratively produced by the UBC Affairs Collective. We were just talking to Sheldon Goldfarb, a UBC archivist who just wrote a book about UBC's 100-year history.
Yeah, Sheldon was really knowledgeable. I was really impressed by his brain and his wealth of knowledge. So we're going to do a quick discussion of our course evaluation. So course evaluations are out. I believe you have until December 4th to finish them. So if you're a student, I would really recommend doing them because they do make a difference in whether your prof will, you know, be hired back. And even if they're already, you know, tenured, at least they should be able to kind of modify courses based on feedback is the hope. So did anyone take a course that they did not enjoy this semester? You don't have to name the course, but maybe name why you didn't like it. Anyone?
I took Words 150.
Words 150. What kind of a class is that? Is that a real class?
I just bombed it.
Words 150. Like W O R D.
Repeat it some more, please. Wait, I mean, it's a required class, so not everybody's gonna like it. But yeah,
it's a good thing I just dropped that from my term for next semester.
Can I even, like, what do you learn in Words 150?
It's helpful because, like, it helps you research skills and your analyzation skills.
But just a little bit boring.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair.
It's sometimes really unfortunate when you have to take those requirement courses, though, yeah. Because you're just forced into a class and you say, oh, well, I just want to graduate. So But I guess it makes the playing field the same, equalizes. So maybe it's important to bear through those courses. I don't know how everyone feels about those, because I know some economics students come up and say, oh, those math courses, holy cow. So I don't know about you guys.
I think it's ridiculous that you have to take required courses when you're paying for it. Like, unless it's applicable to your degree, I don't see the point. Like, that's a money grab. Like, I had to take English when I was in my first year, and it wasn't teaching me about the articles. It was just like a baloney English class. Like, that was $500 that I had to pay just to graduate. You know? I don't know if anyone has.
I mean, I'm in science, so I have to take courses, like 100 level courses, even though I've done a lot of it in high school. And like, that's kind of frustrating that there isn't like a way out of it. But I do see the benefit in some of the faculties to kind of level things out and just make sure that everyone has a really sound foundation.
And it's also, I guess, a lot of the things that we have to do, we have to be disciplined for. And there's only one way to be disciplined for the courses, so that you can, from going to statistics, you can go into stat mech or thermodynamics. So I guess the foundation that's laid down really lets you grow bigger, perhaps. But regardless, those teachers should also be told whether or not they're doing a good job, because that's what encourages people to be able to go forward in their career.
I took a course this semester that I really loved in the First Nations and Indigenous Studies department, which is a new kind of department at UBC, and you can now major in it. But the class was about Indigenous politics and self-determination. The prof was so cool, and like, I don't know, I really felt like every class, like the readings were, like there weren't too many readings, but all of the readings were really well covered, because I think that's what I find really frustrating being in arts is like, when you have all these assigned readings, but you really don't know how they relate at all to like the larger course. And so then when you're going to be like tested on it, you're just, you know, kind of left in the dark as to like what, you know, how to kind of connect all of the coursework. So yeah, my prof in that class was so cool. I would definitely recommend to take FNIS 210. It's really interesting, I think, for anyone. It gives a really good perspective of kind of like Indigenous politics in Canada. Does anyone else have a class they would recommend?
Yeah. So Anthro 210, it's the anthropology of eating. So it's kind of about eating and culture. The professor, Dr. Sarah Findesen, is amazing. I loved that class so much. You know, we talked all about kind of how holistic food is. And then recently we've kind of been talking about food and politics and like biopolitics and food not bombs, and it's just amazing and so interesting. Yeah, I really recommend it.
I took creative writing intro to new media with Jen Moss. Really like that class, helps me a lot with the radio that we're doing now. And I'm taking her 300 level class of how to podcast next semester, and I really like her. She's a really cool woman, does a lot of producing and just really, like, really creative in writing. So that was a good class, and there was no exam. So it was pretty sweet. I had no exams in any of my classes, which is amazing. So
that is really amazing. Sadie, you had mentioned that there was kind of, like, things about the actual evaluation itself that you were kind of thinking about. Do you want to elaborate on that?
I felt that on the actual kind of written out things online, there wasn't a way for me to give feedback because of the way that they were asking questions. It was really hard to give the feedback that I wanted to give. Mm-hmm. And that they're kind of really structured very specifically. And I think that the questions could be formatted in a better way to get more information from the students, because the students who actually, I think, take the time to fill it out do generally have a lot to say. Mm-hmm.
But isn't there a comment section at the very bottom where it says you could elaborate?
Not in all of mine. In some of them, it was a lot about, like, TAs and, like, I didn't have anything to say about the TAs, but I did have stuff to say about other things, but there wasn't a space for that.
Well, it's really interesting how they select what kind of evaluation which teacher gets. I wonder if that has to do with their tenure or not.
Yeah, they kind of select what evaluation you can give on the course even, you know?
So it's interesting. But also it makes me wonder, because for TAs, for example, you have so many TAs that you don't interact with some of them, and you do interact with some others, right? So I wonder how those are adjusted when they're taking the evaluations of the TAs. Because, I mean, statistically, if you just give a really bad mark to a TA, even though you didn't know them, that could really affect them, even though they actually didn't interact with you, and that was the only reason why you gave them a bad evaluation. So I feel like as students, it might be important to take that into consideration when we're
there. There was a way to like say, oh, I didn't really interact with them, or I didn't think like this is a relevant question for me to answer. But I think I'm talking more about just, you know, things that for the professors or for there wasn't a place to say what we thought was relevant in the course or what we thought was really interesting even. So yeah.
Yeah, I think one thing that I was a little bit annoyed by is I was taking a sociology class that's about race and ethnicity. And honestly, like the majority of the readings in the class were written by white men. And I was like, why would that, like, that makes no sense. I would think that, like, there would be a really good variety, and you would want to hear from like many different perspectives in a class like that. So yeah, I definitely think that like the readings list, I've been a lot more critical of that this year.
Yeah, that's really interesting. There is, in one of my classes, this has nothing to do with the evaluation, but presentation was like, why is my curriculum white? And a lot of our reading list comes from white male authors, which is really interesting, and I think a lot of schools are starting to recognize that and starting to, like, implement it. But if I don't know if you could, like, enter that into your evaluation. I haven't actually opened up any of my evals. So.
Get out, Jen. What are you doing commenting?
So, yeah.
Okay, well, you know what? Moving on to, like, a really fun topic. It was... It is the last day of classes. Woo! For semester one. Woo! So today there was a polar bear swim at Rec Beach. Sadie and Jen were in it. How was it?
It was cold.
I didn't think it was that cold. No, like, you didn't really feel the cold. You were just so cold that you're kind of burning, so it was fine.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I think the worst part was when you're waiting for, like, everyone took their clothes off with bathing suits. But
I did see, like, one naked person, and I was like, woo!
But, yeah, the waiting for the countdown to go, I think that was the worst part, because you're like, okay, like, I'm pumped, and now we got to wait for, like, 10 minutes to go in. So, and it was, you know, like, it was fun, and I recommend everyone do it.
Yeah, for sure.
I wouldn't do it again. But I'm old, and like that's a lot of effort to like go down there. So, you know.
I'd do it again. Yeah,
you'd
for
do
sure.
it again? Yeah, but you're young.
How many stairs?
475, I don't know.
Yeah, so Jen and I went, and well, Sadie was there too, but we went and got some audio and like talked to some people who were doing the swim. So we're going to hear this clip. So yeah, wait, just you're gonna be hearing a lot of like, I'm cold.
I'm warm now.
Okay, we are with Jen from UBC Affairs Collective, Caroline from the calendar, and we're about to start the polar bear swim. What is the polar bear swim?
The polar bear swim is an awesome way to celebrate the end of term, because you know what? You suffered through an entire term of classes. Why not celebrate by jumping in the ocean? It's a UBC tradition, and we're making sure that it happens every single year, and we're so excited to be doing it this year as well.
Are you going to be going in?
I'm not going in this year because I have class commitments. Please don't skip class, kids. But I am hoping to get to do it before I graduate. And if I don't get to do it this year, I will make sure that I do it next year.
How many people are we expecting?
Oh my goodness. I actually don't have a number estimate for you. But if you look on the event page, you'll see that a lot of people have responded. A lot of people have RSVP'd. We're really hoping to make this go viral and get as many people out as we can. So we're expecting a lot of people to be here and get to participate in this.
Awesome, thank you.
You're very welcome.
Shake that. Every day I'm shuffling.
Okay, so Jen, we are walking down the very wet steps to Rec Beach, and you are going to be doing the polar bear swim.
Ah! I'm so excited. This is my first time doing it. I've been here for 5 years, and I've never just ran into the ocean with a bunch of people, so I'm really excited.
Amazing, amazing. Are you nervous?
I'm a little nervous. I don't know why. It's just going to be really cold, right? Like, my nipples will be cold, but, right?
Yeah, definitely going to be some hard nips.
Some hard nips. I wonder how many people are going to run in naked.
I'm hoping a lot.
Just everyone naked? I might do it.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like the essence of Wreck Beach, so we'll see how many people have. But this is cool because it's the 5th annual polar bear swim, and it's your 5th year, and it's the year that you're graduating.
I know, isn't that crazy? I'm actually going to graduate.
Okay, happy last day of classes, everyone. We will report back with more people, with more swimmers. Okay, we're hanging out with some lovely folks from the calendar.
What's your name?
I'm Anna.
I'm Jabet.
And you guys are helping to organize Polar Bear Swim. What would you say to me if I don't want to run in? Like, how would you pump me up to run into the ocean?
I mean, you just finished an entire term, so this can't be harder than all of your classes and papers. So
This is true.
It's a tradition, and it's, like, just the best way to celebrate. You're about to go do your exams, and I feel like it'll give you, like, the luck of the entire ocean just by, like, submerging yourself in that freezing cold. Good. It's, like, probably what the Vikings did or something.
Yeah, so, yeah. We ran in before we went to battle. Of exams.
Yeah. Very good. Plus, the adrenaline keeps you warm, so you won't be that cold.
Totally, totally. Okay, thanks so much, guys.
All right, enjoy.
Yeah, thank you.
So, are you guys doing the polar bear swim?
Yes, we are.
Yeah.
Yes.
Is this your first year? Have you done it before?
No.
First time.
No.
Awesome. Are you nervous?
I'm really excited. Yeah. I feel like it'll be really good. Yeah, it's going to be really fun. Very cold.
Nice. There's a lot of seals in there, so just, like, watch
what?
Out.
Yeah,
oh. Wait, what? Like, close to the shore?
Yeah, you just pop his head up over there.
No.
That's so cute. They're like sea dogs.
Have you seen that video of that little girl being pulled in the water in, like, Richmond? Oh. She's, like, feeding a seal, and then it pulls her in.
Yes, I saw that video.
Yeah.
Richmond, we're at UBC. No seals are going to attack us. We're all right.
Are you guys excited that it's the last day of classes?
So excited. Kind of forgot about that, to be honest. I was so excited for this.
Nice. Okay, well, congratulations, and we'll see you in the water.
Yay!
Are you guys doing the swim?
Yes.
Are you excited?
Oh, very excited, yeah.
Is it your first time doing it?
Yes.
Yes, yes,
and
yes.
And we are not sure that we should do it, but the decision maker helped us.
The fireball is calling.
Are you
the fireball's our decision maker.
Yeah, so we're recording this for radio.
Oh, nice.
Radio.
Okay, yeah. I just want to say, I love my parents, I love my mother, I love my girlfriend. I want to greet Tom and Bill and Peter, and I want to greet everyone from our home.
This is happening for us.
Yeah.
Frankie from high school, I never forget what you did in grade 7 to me.
Are you guys exchange students?
No.
Yes.
No.
No?
We all are.
No, not really.
I'm not an exchange.
No, I came from here.
International grad students.
International grad. Okay, yeah. Where are you guys from?
Germany. Germany.
Deutschland.
It's fine.
Do you guys do anything like this in Germany?
Do we?
Well, we don't have an ocean.
I mean, of course.
Yeah.
It is a summer, like skin dipping, like you break in illegally in public swimming pools in the summer. But it's not the same. It's not an ocean. Like, it's a big difference.
Yeah, ocean's been ran Germany.
He's, like, there are only Germans and one American guy, but he's from South Africa, you should ask.
Oh, you're from South Africa. Okay.
So cool.
Are you swimming?
Yeah, definitely. Obviously.
Cool. Where in South Africa are you from?
It's on.
Nice. My best friend lives there now.
I think he was literally the one who made all this, like, actually happening. Like, he said, I'm going to do it. And just because he was so straightforward, everyone said, like, okay, maybe I should do it too. So, like, South Africa rules.
I see that you guys are drinking Caribou. Did you know that?
I know.
So, at the radio station at UBC, CITR, we have a vending machine that sells Caribou.
For the cheapest price. So.
Yeah. So, if you're ever, like, in need of a Caribou, just come into CITR.
Oh, wow. That's amazing.
Okay, good luck, guys. Have fun.
Thank you.
Oh, wait, are you going to go naked?
No.
I'll go in underwear.
Oh,
are you going naked?
Are you going naked?
Maybe.
Don't look.
Depending on what.
He will maybe go naked. Because this is what the Germans do usually. Are you guys
like Canadians do too? We go naked all the time.
Okay, good luck, guys. Woo! Bye! Woo! Okay, are you guys running in?
Yes.
Yeah.
Are you ready?
Yes.
Are you cold?
Not really, no.
Okay.
I'm feeling good. I might be, though.
Okay.
In like 5 seconds, when we run it.
Okay, good luck, good luck.
Okay, let's go.
Someone is on top of their friend's shoulders, and everyone started screaming. It was really exciting.
So thank you so much for listening to UBC Happy Hour. That was a very happy hour right by the Wreck Beach Ocean. We are broadcasting from Musqueam territory and Coast Salish territory. Thank you so much. And if you like what you're hearing and would like to contribute to the show, or if you want to see something covered on the show, send us an email at ubcaffairs@cbitr.ca. I'm Julia Ferry.
Jen Brulé.
Lalaine Allen-Dogan.
I'm Alex Len.
And I'm Sadie Lai.
And we will see you guys next week.
Woo! Happy last day of classes, everyone! Yay!
At Dunkin' Donuts, each and every
radio show
is brewed fresh and served fresh at the peak of its flavor. If you're a tough customer, only the taste of this
radio show
will do. So go ahead, let Dunkin' Donuts make your
radio experience
exquisite.
Indeed.
Dunkin' Donuts, serving sweet treats from the Pop Underground. Thursdays, noon to 1.
Conservation is the first and best resource option for BC. Do your part. Turn off the lights when you leave a room and unplug your cell phone charger when charging is complete. Visit bchydro.com to find out more ways you can make a difference. This message brought to you by BC Hydro Power Smart and CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver.
Randophobic is best thought of as an introversal jukebox which has no concept of genre, style, political boundaries, or even space-time relevance. But it does know good sounds from bad. Lately, the program has been focused on Philip Random's All Vinyl Countdown plus Apocalypse, the 1,111th greatest records you probably haven't heard. And we're not afraid of noise. Randophobic, every Saturday at 11 p.m. to 2 a.m. at CITR 101.9 FM.
It's not just rich people that own the media.
But by leaving out the most important things you need to know, they can elevate awareness to a new all-time low.
I own my media.
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 The Media Co-op is a grassroots national news network that's owned by its members.
But if it's just left out, can you say the paper?